This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, one of the things we've been observing over the last several weeks when we've been looking at the Psalms is that life's journey is really can be a pretty pressure-packed journey. All of us understand, for example, how much pressure parents feel today. I look around, I see a lot of parents here, okay? Think about it, man. All parents want to be successful parents, right? Right, parents? Okay, how do you know you're a successful parent? Most people think, well, when I have a successful kid. And so parents walk through life sometimes anxious, sometimes guilty, sometimes paralyzed with the pressure of producing this successful kid, and a household almost never has a moment to rest because it's pressured into involvement with everything that might help the kid, you know. And the same thing happens in careers. Most people feel the pressure of wanting to do well, of to impress the boss, to stand out, to feel the pressure to succeed and move ahead. So all of that's true in our lives. You know what? In 2012, I don't know if you've ever heard this. In 2012, there were 125 students at Harvard, and these students were called on the carpet for cheating on a take-home test. And it was I don't know if this is ironic. I think it is. The test was Introduction to Congress class. So I think it's... That probably is ironic, I think, there. But they didn't have to cheat, man. It was a take-home test, and yet they all got together to figure out the answers. After the school investigated the charges, most of those students were forced to withdraw from Harvard. Now, why the cheating? Because of the pressure, not just to do well, but to do superbly well. And that means that all of you, by the way, if there's any high school students here today, I know that you feel the pressure of getting into the right college, of doing well when you get through college. You get the point. And many of you have been there, haven't you? You've felt the anxiety. You've felt the pressure of life. So how then does a believer learn to rest and find peace in the midst of this journey that we're on called life and then all of its pressures? Psalm 127 makes that clear. These five short sentences, man, give us an important key to find a release from pressure and with it peace. In fact, the key truth found in these verses has inspired me over and over and over again in my own life. It's the take-home truth of this passage that has helped me. And the take-home truth I've written for you in your outline there, the way to open our lives to God's provision and to find peace in the midst of life's pressures is to surrender ultimate control for the success of every venture to Him. And what we're going to do today is the psalmist here, in this case King Solomon, makes two observations to help us flesh out that truth. And I want you to know I'm going to spend almost all my time on the first observation. But I will show you how the last three verses of this passage connect to the whole and how they fit into the whole. And the first observation is simply this. When God is left out of any endeavor, human activity is never enough. Okay? Just simply not enough. And you find that in the first two verses of Psalm 127. Look what it says in this passage. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early, go to bed, go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Okay, that was just for you, April. Okay, he gives to his beloved sleep. Okay, so in other words, everything in life, and not just building homes, not just succeeding in business, but everything in life depends upon God's involvement. Three times in these verses, he uses the phrase in vain. In vain simply means that that activity has no value, that it's worthless. So the idea is that human effort alone will not produce the desired effect, that our efforts alone are never going to be enough. You know what this passage is doing is speaking against the attitude that we determine our own destiny, that we make our own breaks, and that ultimately success is in our hands. And in fact, when I was writing this message this week, it reminded me of an old commercial that was on in the 70s, and it was a commercial that was touting the wonders of an investment firm called Smith Barney. And they got this British actor, John Houseman, to do a commercial. And he coined a phrase in that commercial that stuck around for a very long time in pop culture. And if you're young enough not to have seen this commercial, I think it's my duty to show it to you because so you can be, you know, relevant, okay? And know what this phrase is. So watch this 30-second commercial.
John Houseman for the investment firm of Smith Barney.
Good investments don't walk up, bite you on the bottom, and say, we're here. Finding them takes good old-fashioned hard work, research, the kind they do at Smith Barney. Smith Barney is among a handful of top investment firms singled out for their work in research. Smith Barney. They make money the old-fashioned way. They earn it.
Okay. I always love that phrase. Smith Barney. They make money the old-fashioned way. They earn it. Okay. You know, it's like, they earn it. And I think sometimes Christians, we're saying the same thing. You know, we do success the old-fashioned way. We earn it. You know, we make it happen. We do it. But what happens when you believe that lie? First, you leave God out of the equation, so you're not asking for his help, relying on him and for whatever you're doing. But in addition, you and I place the pressure for success then squarely on our shoulders, man, because so it is going to be very difficult to find peace in the middle of any big project, anything you're doing, because you've taken the ultimate responsibility. You're depending on yourself, and you're limited. You know, I love our Celebrate Recovery ministry here because people go to CR who are dealing with hurts and hang-ups and habits, and these often are in some way affecting your life in a very great way. Well, one of the first things they teach you is this. You are powerless to get that fixed on your own. And I love that about that ministry, and it's something that all of us need to know. Now, by the way, if you're a new Christian, you may be saying, but Art, I thought God wanted us to work hard. I thought that God wanted us to take on our responsibility for whatever project I'm involved in and just make it happen. Well, in a way, you're right. In fact, in Proverbs, this same author, King Solomon, of Psalm 127, says this in Proverbs 10. Look what he says. Lazy hands make a man poor. Diligent hands bring wealth. Well, clearly what he's saying is that you and I must take responsibility to work hard, to work consistently, to do everything we can do if we expect to make a living. We expect to be successful. But guys, look what Proverbs 10:22 turns around and says. Look what it says. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble to it. So which is it? Which is it? Did my diligent hands produce the wealth, or did the blessing of the Lord produce the wealth? Well, you've got to answer that question to get Psalm 127, and the answer is this. My hard work is necessary to produce wealth, or any other good thing, by the way, but the hard work is insufficient to produce the wealth without God's involvement. So, yes, success is very unlikely if a person is lazy, a person doesn't plan ahead, a person doesn't do what's necessary, but hard work alone won't cut it. It's a partnership, it's a collaboration with God. And that's the reason that in Proverbs 16:3, I don't have it to project, but But in Proverbs 16:3, it says, commit to the Lord whatever you do. In other words, partner with him. Seek his help. Seek his wisdom. Then do what you need to do. But understand that without the Lord's involvement, what you're doing is not going to be enough. Guys, Psalm 127 never says that since the Lord guards the city or builds the house, that there is no need for your work. Doesn't say that. It's not work that's the problem. Look at the passage. It's the arrogance that assumes that your hard work is the essential ingredient to success. No, it's not the essential ingredient. It's the necessary ingredient, but not the essential ingredient. It isn't work that God says is done in vain. It's the kind of work. God assumes that you're going to be working at building your home, building your family. He's going to assume that whatever job you're in, you're going to be working hard at that job. It's a particular type of work that's in vain, and it's the type of work that leaves God out. It's the type of work that forgets your need for his involvement. It's like a woodpecker. He's pecking on this tree, and he turns his head for a moment, and a bolt of lightning just shears the tree off. He turns back around and says, wow, what a powerful beak I have. Okay. That's what it's like, you know, when we say, oh, yeah, look what I did. You know, it's possible to get confused about this. I'll tell you why. It's possible to get confused and think that we're actually the ones providing for ourselves. And the reason is this. God usually gives us nothing unless we work for it. Now, God is an awesome God. Many times he will give us things that we don't work for. But in general, God does not give us something unless we work for it. So we look then at our work and think, well, look what I did. I did that. But that's not the way it works. Only God can prosper the works of our hands, no matter how diligent or how industrious we may think we are. Success in any endeavor is doing everything I can do, but relying on God to do everything I cannot do. I can make a plan, sure, but God must give me the energy and resources to work that plan out. I can brainstorm solutions, but God has got to guide me to a certain solution. I can seek an opportunity, but God's got to open the doors for that opportunity. So God arranges, God empowers, God supplies. He opens and shuts doors. He touches hearts that we can't touch. He strengthens us when we're tired. He gives us favor with people that we need to have favor with. He speaks to us. He guides us. He watches, warns, protects. Guys, we think we did it ourselves? You got to be kidding. Guys, Martin Luther had a favorite way of talking about this, the great theologian. Martin Luther used to say something like this. Who, you think, well, I went out and did the work. And Martin Luther would say, who do you think put the silver and gold in the mountains? Who gave animals and birds the ability to reproduce so you could have some food? And his point was simply, yeah, you may have gone out and got the silver or gold, but who provided the gold in the first place to get? Who provided whatever it is that you're doing? So here it is again. It's collaboration. You and I, guys, think about it. We can't even watch over our children every minute of the day to protect them. Really, we can't guarantee any outcome in life. And there are two disastrous results of thinking that we can. The first result is we rely on ourselves instead of God, so we ignore the most essential ingredient needed for true success. But secondly, and that's the point of what I'm talking about, that person is choosing to take on responsibilities that God never meant for us to take on. So the answer to escaping life's pressures is not escaping life like the yuppies did in the 90s. You know, the yuppies, these urban professionals, they were quitting their high-pressure, well-paid jobs, and they were moving to the countryside to raise llamas, okay? And they were thinking, oh, this is going to be so much better. Guys, and let's admit it, most of us have had some version of that daydream, right? Okay, I'm going to go out, and it's going to be beautiful, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the answer. The answer is to understand what you are responsible for and then leaving to God what He is responsible for. It's taking responsibility for what you can do, what you ought to do, what you should do, and then leaving to God the responsibility of all the things that are not up to me. Do you know that King Solomon fleshes out this principle in Psalm 127 by giving us three examples of how the principle works? Let's look at each of those examples. First, he talks about the area of family life. Unless the Lord builds the house, he tells us, its builders labor in vain. Now, the phrase build a house here could refer simply to the construction of an actual building, but probably it is meant to refer to everything that goes on in connection with life in the home. You could call it household management, you could call it family life, whatever, but it would include all the activities that go into a home that make it a home, from meals together to conversations at bedtime, to activities that you share together, to helping your child achieve dreams that they are interested in, and even helping your family achieve the dreams that it wants to accomplish. So in the family, parent, ask yourself this: what is your job and what is God's job? See, in every endeavor that we go into, we ought to ask that question: what's my job? What's God's job? Well, guys, think about it. Author and preacher Tony Campolo said that his wife Peggy, who's a pretty feisty lady, was a stay-at-home mom, a full-time mom with their children. And when she was doing that, and someone would ask her, "And what is it that you do, my dear?" Peggy would say this, and I've written it down exactly. Here it is. She'd respond this way: "I am socializing two Homo sapiens into the dominant values of the Judeo-Christian tradition in order that they might be instruments for the transformation of the social order into the kind of eschatological utopia that God willed from the beginning of creation." And then Peggy would turn to the other person and say, "And what do you do?" Okay? So now there's a lady who understood her responsibility, right? So parents, your tasks are many and varied, but your responsibility boils down to demonstrating love and discipline so that when your child leaves the home, they possess the essential foundation of a strong faith and good character so as to be God's instruments in the world. That's your job. That's my job. That was my job when I was a parent. And now that I'm a grandparent, that's one of the things I'm trying to help my children with, my grandchildren with. So all the things a parent must do, when you think about that, man, there are a lot of them. You've got to set limits and enforce limits so that a child learns to respect boundaries. You've got to demonstrate consistent love so they feel loved and important and they go out of the world knowing who they are in Christ. You've got to encourage their faith. You've got to build in wisdom by allowing life to happen to them and then helping them get God's point of view in the middle of that difficult situation. You've got to teach them to think about other people, not just themselves. And of course, I haven't even scratched the surface of what parents do, right? Not even the surface. So here's the deal. If you feel, parent, if you think that you alone are responsible for the success of your child, you will be crushed by that responsibility. Crushed. You see, I've always said, I've been telling parents this for 20 years, parenting is a very guilt-producing activity. And the reason it is because we always think, well, I could have done more, I could have done better. Oh, they have this problem. Was it me? Parents are so insecure on that. Was it me? You know? So, guys, the tendency is always to second-guess yourself. But the psalmist helps us. Unless the Lord builds the house, he who build it labor in vain. So you have to think, hey, as I work hard to be a good parent, what's my responsibility and what's God's? And it's amazing, parents, what you can't do. You can't even help. You can help. You can give the gospel to your child, but you can't make them receive Christ. You've got to depend upon God for specific guidance on problems with your children. You've got to depend on God when your child takes the car keys and drives off to who knows where. You've got to depend on God for all kinds of things. You can't make a child follow Jesus or love Jesus. And in fact, guys, the only way to be successful as a parent is to partner with God and to do everything you can do while you rely on Him and stay in contact with Him for everything that He wants to do. And that's the reason, by the way, that Naomi and I know that many, many parents in this body, we spend a lot of time praying for our kids. We spend a lot of time praying, Lord, what do we do here? What do we do here? How can we be wise in working with our children? You've got, though, to depend on God's gracious hand on your family, that His labor will be the most essential labor that has to happen. And so again, parents, that means you better be connecting with God. Now, what is said of building the house here is also true of the security of a city or state or a nation. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Now, in our day and age, this phrase, watches over the city, could apply to people who do that literally, like policemen, firemen, other people. They watch over the city to protect it. It could also apply to people who are thinking and planning at a whole different level. City council members and state senators and national office holders. Now, what Solomon points out here about the people who watch over the city is that they've got to do the very best they can, but the task is way too big for them. And yes, the people, let the people found a city. Let the people establish a nation, God would say. And let that nation grow. Let that nation prosper, God would say. But unless that city or nation lives under the guidance of God and depends upon Him, will that city or nation prosper? Will that city's that nation's prosperity endure? I don't think so. Not in the long run. You know what? Politicians tend to think that it's all about them. That, oh man, I'll just be clever and I'll be, you know, it's about power, it's about courage, it's about creating consensus. But Psalm 33 says, man, the Lord foils the plans of nations. The Lord is all powerful. So without dependence upon Him, what happens? Safety is not happening. You know, I read the Heritage Foundation this week. Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank. And the Heritage Foundation has been keeping track of what's been happening since 9/11. And they reported recently that 50 publicly known terrorist attacks against the United States have been foiled since 9/11. That is, the fact that the United States has not suffered a large-scale attack since 9/11, I think, speaks to the country's counterterrorism successes. I mean, there are a lot of them. But friends, there is no way that counterterrorism people can guarantee our protection. Why? Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Yes, we can thank the people who protect us. We can thank the people in our lives, in our culture that do such a great job for us. But even more, we must thank and depend upon our God. So how then would those who protect the city apply this passage? Well, politicians and policemen and judges and all those people, they've got to do everything they can do. But then they've got to depend upon God for everything they cannot do. So, my friend Bruce Danmeyer, who is a state senator, man, Bruce has to work hard at consensus. He's got to use whatever forces he can to protect Washington State financially, socially, morally, every other way, use all the wisdom he can to help our state. But Bruce cannot change the heart of another senator. He cannot stop every amendment. He cannot block every piece of bad legislation. And in this state, Bruce is going to have an ulcer if he thinks he can. He is. So what does he do? He does everything he can do. And then he depends upon God for everything that he cannot do. He humbles himself before God and relies on Him. We don't abandon our duty. We surrender our duty to the only one who can bear it. So important for you and me. Don't abandon your duty. Surrender your duty to the only one who can bear it. The only way to find wisdom for the task and peace in the midst of the task is to surrender ultimate control for the success into the hands of God. The third area Solomon mentions is the area of work or making a living. He says, in vain you rise early, stay up late, toiling for food to eat. But then he grants sleep to those he loves. Unless you have a dog, then probably you're not going to get any sleep, if I had to guess. No, I'm just kidding. The verse is talking about rising early to go to work and then staying up late to work and then eating food that is earned by heavy labor. The point is that our frantic efforts to make a living can wreck our lives. If we feel, no, it's all up to me, in our frantic efforts to make a living or to get rich, whatever, you know, we go way out of balance. So we have this arrogant, distrustful person who says, it's all up to me. Bam, I'm staying up late. I'm going to bed, getting up early. I'll make it happen. Or you can have somebody who's trusting God, saying, I'll do everything I can. I'll work in the way that is best for my company and everything that goes with it, but I don't have to let this pressure be on my shoulders. What's the balance? Do you know what the Scripture says about work? There are three things that it tells you about work. And by the way, I can tell it to you in 90 seconds. You know what the first thing God says about work? Work as if you're working for Jesus. So if you're flipping burgers at McDonald's, then the person with that little hat on telling you what to do, treat them like Jesus. Work for them just that way. If you're the CFO of some big company, then your boss, treat them like you would be working for Jesus. Number two, the Scriptures say work hard. And by the way, I have these Scriptures in your outline there. You can look at them later. Yeah, work hard. Be diligent. The Proverbs are pretty clear. And finally, work smart. That is, be wise in how you plan and how you use your resources and how you implement and how you use your time. So guys, Scriptures say, hey, work for Jesus, work like you're working for Jesus, then work hard and work smart. There it is. There's your work life right there. Now, that's what we do. But we got to depend on God for everything else. If you're a salesman, yeah, you can make all the calls you need to make and you can line up your appointments and you can make a great presentation. You can work hard that way, but you can't guarantee a sale, no matter what your sales manager tells you. If you're an engineer, okay, you can be a great team player, a solid contributor, but you can't guarantee that you'll find favor with your boss. You can't guarantee it. If you're a surgeon, you can do a great job in that surgery, but ultimately healing is up to God, how that patient comes out. So what do? You work hard, you work smart, you serve your company or whoever you're working for, just like you'd be working for Jesus. And then you ask for God's involvement and God's empowerment, and you let Him do the worrying. Man, that is a better way to live, I'll tell you that. Notice the last phrase in verse 2. He grants sleep to those He loves. Rather than being anxious about provision, when we stay in balance, and we gratefully receive the sleep and rest that God provides. Now, Solomon goes on to flesh out the truth a little more fully. Now, I've spent most of the time I'm going to spend, but I want to briefly let you see one other observation he makes. Observation two is simply this. Even the birth of a child is a gift from God and not subject to our control. Look what he says in verse 3. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Now, guys, suddenly, have you guys ever read this passage and think, has the psalmist lost his train of thought? What's happening here? I mean, it appears at first glance that another psalm has been incorrectly attached to verses 1 and 2. And you're kind of wondering, what's going on here? Well, how in the world are they connected? It's quite simple. Not only are my livelihood, my home life, and my community's security dependent upon God and His gifts, even my children are gifts from God, not the result of my own control. In other words, the conception of a single child is the work of God. He is the creator. He is the author of life. He's the sustainer of life. And He's the one we depend on for all things, even for the birth of children. These verses are simply a continuation of the take-home truth. And you remember the take-home truth? The way to open our lives to God's provision and find peace in the midst of life's pressures is to surrender ultimate control for the success of every venture to Him. And the surrender and dependence, that surrender, that dependence even includes our children. Now, Solomon, having said that, he just goes on to give you, to tell you what a great provision children are. So he just ends the psalm going, okay, let me just tell you about children, how great a gift this is. And first he says that they're a heritage. Now, in other words, when he says heritage, he means this. Children extend our name and our blood into the next generation. And in that way, because they extend our name and our blood, our children are a heritage for us. Secondly, he says the birth of a child is a reward. Now, at 3 a.m., some of you new mothers are not quite sure that reward is the best term, but no, that's only momentary. We know with all the work, a child is a tremendous blessing. Just remember this. In the Scriptures, when God rewards someone, sometimes it is a response to a person's actions. Maybe they trusted God. Sometimes it's that response. But sometimes God's reward is given simply because God has chosen to give it. And He can do that. He can choose to give us whatever gift He wants, regardless of what we have done. But regardless of why a child is given to a family, that child becomes a source of joy and therefore is a reward. And third, and I'm just going to paraphrase it in my own words. Third, children are the best retirement plan going. Okay? Because when you have children, those children come to your defense. Look what it says. The psalmist observes here that because a man has children, he shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Now, the city gates in that day were the place where commerce took place and the place where justice was dispensed. And so if you're standing at the city gates and you're getting hurt, your grown children will come to your defense. So, guys, that's true of us today. We show love to our children. We give them protection, and we maintain that bond with them, and we give them what we need to give them. Then someday when we're in trouble, since they love and respect us, they stick together with us in time of pain. Guys, in Psalm 127, God is helping us to see. He's helping us to see everyday life against the broader background of His all-pervading presence and power and control. So we got a choice to make. Here it is. You ready for the choice? You either rely on God or you rely on yourselves. You can either fool yourselves into believing that you can control life, or you can surrender your false sense of control to the Lord. And I've done that many, many, many times, believe me. We either live in fear, frustration, and pressure, or we simply do the very best we can and rely on God for all the things that we cannot do. Here's the promise of this passage. If you make that surrender, if we make that surrender, we not only invite God to do what only He can do, but we also live without that crushing pressure as we partner with God to build our family, to guard our city, to provide for our needs, and even to provide a new generation for the years to come. If you and I are just willing to give up that control, wow, God is involved and the burden lifts. God is the sovereign Lord in the home, in the city, and in the workplace. So let's rest in that today as we pray together. Let's pray. Father, life can do a number on us so easily where we just feel like giving up. We feel like failures in some area. We feel as if we just can't go on sometimes. So, Lord, I'm praying for so many believers today that they would just surrender. That they would surrender that difficult parenting situation. That they would surrender that big challenge at work. That they would surrender that uneasiness they feel about what's happening in our country. That they would surrender to you. And then find, Father, that partnership.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.